everybody. Jeff Jones here. Welcome to the weekly Chase Oaks Church podcast. Before we dive in, I want to encourage you to subscribe to our YouTube channel and download the Chase Oaks Church app. The app is the best place to catch up on messages, engage with our community, and stay in the loop with everything going on around here. Most importantly, my hope is that today's message inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey. Here we go. Well, welcome to Chase Oaks and to At The Movies. Now you know the movie for this week. Next week is it's Father's Day weekend. It'll be a movie with dads in mind and guys in mind, but everybody will like it. This week, though, Inside Out 2, which was quite a phenomenon. It came out last year, has grossed $1.7 billion over that year, the highest animated film of all time. And so when you think about, well, that struck a nerve, yeah, it really struck a nerve. And you think, well, why did it take off like that? And yes, it's well written and it's well acted and it's well animated, but there's other movies that could say that. I think the reason this one became such a phenomenon is because of the theme. Because the theme is about emotions, our psyche, and in particular, the introduction in this movie, Inside Out 2, of anxiety. And how to process and handle anxiety, because, of course, we live in a world of anxiety, a very anxious generation, an anxious world. And so we're going to do that. We're going to talk about emotions in general, and then we'll dive into anxiety. How do we better deal with that? And the story of the movie is Riley is this girl who goes through puberty. And as she goes through puberty, there are new emotions that are introduced, more complex emotions introduced into her life that try to take over, eventually do take over. And Joy, who's been the emotion in control of her childhood, she's not the only emotion in the control room, but you know, anger is there and disgust and fear. But she's the one that has processed everything. She's the one that keeps Riley happy and in a positive space. And then all that other stuff happens. And Joy is my favorite character in the movie. You can put her picture up there. Peter tonight is trying to look like Joy. I don't think we're going to get the... There it is. And Joy is carefully kind of curating her experiences and her memories and the emotions she experiences to keep everything positive, to keep her happy, and to keep all the negative stuff out, which I can relate to. We'll talk about that. Sounds more healthy than it is, but let's watch. So you see what Joy's up to, right? Keep the best, toss the rest. And which to me is like, yeah, why not? Let's put all the negative stuff in the, we're not gonna think about that right now. But what you see in the movie is that's not a winning strategy for very long, right? Because that stuff doesn't just go away. Right? It's there. And healthy people process things that may not be so, you know, all emotions are actually healthy and good. And that's something I've shared before. I've had to learn. I remember a counselor when I was in graduate school, and he drew this circle. And in that circle, he put different emotions like anger and disappointment and happiness and joy and there were positive ones, good ones, and grief and sadness and all this stuff all mixed together. And he said, that's actually not it yet, so put that down. And he said, so all these emotions are actually godly emotions, like God experiences all of these. But somewhere along the line, Jeff, you decided to just cross off the ones that you don't like. And so happiness and joy, okay, you'll do that. The other stuff, you just sort of toss or stuff or whatever, like anger or sadness or disappointment. And okay, I'm an optimistic person, upbeat person. You think, oh, that's great. You know, you have a silver lining for everything. But he said, actually, that's not godly. It's actually godly to process all emotion. And he said, not only that, but you don't let other people do it. Like when other people are in that mode, you sort of try to get them out of it instead of sitting in it. You get them out, oh, it's okay, so you lost your job. Well, look at all the free time, go play golf, it'll be great, you know, whatever. It'd be like, no, it's actually a good thing to sit in. Like, God doesn't do that to us, and you shouldn't either. and you have just chosen somewhere along the line not to be godly. That's the way he said it. So I didn't go back to him. He's such a downer. I did. And then a few years ago, I have had to learn that. A few years ago, I was talking with another counselor, a guy named Lee, and he was, well, that emotion wheel, the other one that came up, is a feelings wheel. And you see the happy and the yellow on the left. That's all good. I like those. But then you've got anger and sadness and all that. So he, one time we were talking, and he's trying to get me to feel all this stuff. And he said, hey, something happened. He said, how does that make you feel? And I said, well, sad. Okay, that's one of the basic ones there, sad. And I was really proud of myself for saying that. And he said, well, that's a good start. Now let's dig deeper. I'm like, dig deeper, good start. Come on, you should be happy. Like you should be in a happy sphere because I just said I'm sad. I'm not wiggling out of it. And he said, no, that's great, but let's go deeper and look at all those feelings. And he maybe get down to whether it's disappointment and the deeper and deeper and deeper, which was really, really good. Now, the reason I'm saying all this is just, I think the movie, this is like a bonus point. We're going to talk mainly about anxiety, but in a world of social media, in a world where everybody's life seems so awesome, and this is true for everybody, but if you're a teenager, if you're a college student, and please listen to me, and that is, it is okay not to be okay all the time. And that part of being a person, I mean, God experiences this. It's actually godly when we allow ourselves to experience disappointment and hurt and anger and the different things that we'll feel, that's actually a good thing. And other people, their life looks so awesome. And even when they say it's not awesome, the way they do it still seems so awesome. And it's impressive, even when they're trying to act unimpressive. And all that's just a facade. Everybody's not okay all the time. When Jesus was here on the planet, he wasn't okay all the time. And he was open and honest about that, including the emotion we'll talk about, the introduction of anxiety. And as we said, we live in an anxious world. 1 out of 8 Americans have a diagnosed anxiety disorder. Just pretty interesting to think about. Like, that's very new over the last 5-10 years. This huge rise. And 8 out of 8 Americans, of course, deal with anxiety. We all deal with anxiety. And anxiety comes into her life. We're going to talk about anxiety. But first, let's be introduced. So anxiety comes into the mix. And it's interesting in the movie because I think this is really smart. And it, as we're going to see, there's even biblical underpinning to this too, that the movie has a very nuanced view of anxiety. It's not just anxiety is all bad. That there's actually a place for what you might call anxiety or concern. We actually need that. It's just it can go overboard. And so it's a point that anxiety makes as she's trying to explain why she needs to be on the team. Let's watch the next scene. Okay, so she's making her point, right? She's already starting to spin. We'll talk about that. But there is a place for concern. There's a place for that. I mean, for example, this week, my boys and I are planning a helicopter skiing trip up in British Columbia. And my brother-in-law is actually the one planning it, who's like expert skier. My kids are expert skiers. They would call me an advanced skier, but not expert, not extreme like they are. And they chose a helicopter ski operation that is not broad. Like some of them are broad. They cater to anywhere from intermediate and up skiers. But there's one that focuses on extreme and expert skiers only. And guess which one they picked? That one. And I'm like, I think an appropriate level of concern is like, hey, wait a minute. Like, I'm reasonably competent, skier in a resort, but an extreme skier, like the ski movie people, maybe you, but not me. And so I'm freaking out a little bit, right? I'm sorry. And that's okay. It's okay to have a proper level of concern. It's just when concern becomes anxiety that begins to take over, that's when the problem is. And that's the thing with anxiety, is that anxiety is not a content backseat driver. Anxiety likes to push the driver out and get behind the wheel. And we're gonna see that in this next scene in the movie, and then everything kind of goes haywire from there. but let's watch. All right, you have to appreciate the air holes. But anxiety takes over. That's a big part of the rest of the movie, and things start to really spin once that happens. She eventually has an all-out just panic attack. But on the way to that, Riley, fueled by anxiety, and with anxiety in the control center of her life, you know, driving the car, she spins out and starts just by, you know, spinning out on all the things that could happen that haven't happened yet. That's why Jesus said one time, don't worry about the future because not going to help, right? It hadn't even happened. But that's what anxiety does, right? We start thinking about all the what ifs. What if that? 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 Hadn't happened, but we're, you know, consumed by it. She then begins, you start feeling out of control, right? So she starts becoming very controlling and making decisions that she would not have made otherwise, like leaving her friends behind at the hockey camp and pursuing friends that would make her more popular, kind of cooler friends, and mistreating the ones. Because she wants to make sure she gets on the team, she sacrifices her integrity and steals something from the coach to give her an edge, and which is not her. That's not what she would normally do. But that's what happens with anxiety. Anxiety can make us do things and act in certain ways and all that, and disrupt peace with God, in our soul, with other people. So there is appropriate concern. We just can't let it get to all that anxiety that takes over. And so that's what I want us to talk about as we take that thought biblically. Because, you know, the Bible 2,000 years ago, it's not like they didn't deal with anxiety. It was a very unpredictable and difficult world. And 2,000 years ago, Paul writes a chapter in the book of Philippians that is so helpful. It's on anxiety, this paragraph. And it is incredibly helpful to help us know what to do with it, because Paul was writing to an anxious group of people. For one, Paul was under house arrest in Rome, waiting to be tried for a trial related to his Christianity before Caesar. And that was unpredictable. He didn't know what would happen. But back in Philippi, a church that he had started, the first church in Europe, but he had started it some years before. He knew them well. They were his friends. They were supporters. Like, they were tight. And Paul knew that they were beginning to face anxious times because of persecution. And the first wave of persecution against Christians was starting in that part of the Roman Empire, and it was very unpredictable how far it would go. And so these Christians in church, imagine you and me, if all of a sudden persecution started, am I going to lose my freedom? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my possessions? Am I going to lose my life? I mean, all the what ifs like were going on. It was very uncertain. And so Paul writes this paragraph that is so helpful to them 2,000 years ago and their uncertainty to help us in ours. So I want you, as we read this paragraph, to think about an area in your life that you'd be like, yeah, when I get anxious, it tends to be that. Or maybe it's just really obvious right now because you're dealing with something very difficult. And here's what Paul says. He starts out this way. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I'll say it again, rejoice. So it sounds like me. Just say, no, get over it. It'll be okay. We're going to say it's way deeper than that. Because what he's talking about when he says rejoice, they would have heard that and think, we're going to rejoice that we're facing persecution, that we might lose everything we have, that we might lose freedom. Some people may even be mistreated and beaten or killed, or like we're supposed to rejoice in that. And that's not what he says rejoice in. He says rejoice in the Lord, no matter what the circumstances. Now, we'll come back to that. Next, he says, let your gentleness be evident to all. We'll come back to that as well. It feels like kind of a little ADD moment. Like, why did he talk about that? Why is he talking about let your gentleness be evident at all when he's going to talk about how to deal with anxiety? But we'll get there. Just hold that thought. And then he says, the Lord is near. You know, when he says the Lord is near, there's a couple of things that he might mean there. And I think he actually is meaning both. He could be thinking when he says, well, the Lord is near. I know this is difficult. I know it's scary. The Lord is near. He could be pointing to the fact that one day Jesus will return, and it could be really near. It could be really soon. And he's saying, just hang in there. I know it's difficult, but the Lord is near. He could come at any time. That's possible. He could also be saying, and I think there's a little bit of both, but I think it's primarily the second one, that what he's saying is, hey, I know this is difficult, but you are not on your own. The Lord is near. In fact, he is with you. He is in you. He's closer than close. He is not up in heaven indifferent. He is in control. He is with you. He has your best interests at heart. He is with you and for you. You are not on your own. You may feel like you're on your own, that everything's out of control. It's not. The Lord is right in it. He's right in it with you. And then our key thought here, verse 6, do not be anxious about anything. In light of the fact that God is near, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, some of you are in a situation right now, in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. So Paul, for those who are anxious, he says, well, don't be. So we can go home. Just stop it. Don't do it anymore. Is that helpful? All right? And Paul knows what I'm talking about. If it were that easy, right? You're anxious, well, just stop. Stop doing that. Don't do that anymore. He's actually going to help us. He's going to tell us, okay, here's what to do. Here's how to move from that anxious spot. But again, remember how I said that the Bible has a pretty nuanced view of anxiety. This passage does a great job of illustrating that. Because the word he uses for anxiety, you know, the New Testament was not written in English. Originally, it's written in Koine Greek, translated in English. So the Greek word is merumna. And when he says, do not be anxious, do not have merumna about anything. But that word he uses multiple times in his writings. For example, in 2 Corinthians, one time he's talking about a very difficult time in his life as a pastor and leader. He says, besides everything else, I face daily the pressure of my merumna, my concern for all the churches. He's saying, I have merumna, I have stress because of merumna for the churches, and he's not apologizing for it. It's not bad that he has merumna for the churches, that he has concern for the churches. He should have concern for the churches. It's actually not a bad thing. It's actually, we should have some merumna. We should have some concern for things going on in the world, things going on in our life, certainly things going on in other people's lives. In fact, earlier in Philippians, Paul uses the same word merumna in a very positive way, talking about Timothy. Timothy was one of the people on Paul's ministry team that had been with him in Philippi. And he says to the Philippian church, you know, Timothy's the only one on my team that I think really has the right kind of genuine merumna for you, Philippians. And that was a good thing. Like, he's got genuine concern, genuine merumna for you. In 1 Corinthians, he tells Christians, that's you and me if you're a Christian, that we should have merumna for one another. That when something is going on in somebody's life, I should not be indifferent. I should have merumna. It should matter to me. I should be concerned. I should care. I should interrupt my life to reach out, to pray, to help, to do whatever I can do, motivated by merumna. And so here Paul says, well, don't have merumna about anything. You're like, well, what are you talking about? Which one is it? Because you have it. Timothy has it. You say we should all have it for each other, and now you say we shouldn't have it. And here's what I think he's saying, is that when merumna is good, having concern is good, but when it gets to a place that could be translated anxiety, when we allow merumna to begin to control us, to get in a way that it turns into anxiety, and we start spinning out and thinking about all the what ifs and all that kind of stuff, we allow merumna to be in the driver's seat, it's not going to be a good situation. There's a place for merumna. That's not the place. So how do we keep merumna from becoming anxiety? Appropriate concern from becoming something way more than that. And that is how the passage is so helpful. So what does he say? He says, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. A short way to say that, that's memorable, that I hope we can all remember when you may be anxious about something right now. If not, you will be tomorrow or sometime. It's an anxious world. That when anxiety creeps in and we feel merumna becoming something more than that, what Paul is saying is do this, to name it and trade it. Let's all just say it together. Name it and trade it. Name it and trade it. One more time, name it and trade it, because I don't want us to remember that. Like when we start to spin in anxiety, to name it and then trade it. To turn it into a prayer request, meaning we name it. God, this is what's going on. Here's what I'm asking you to do. So that we can then trade that. We give something to God and we receive it. For the trade, let's talk about naming it. It's really a powerful thing to name our anxiety and turn it into a prayer request. Because when we name it, it puts boundaries around it. It's not just general anxiety. We start to spin out and we're worried about all the what if that, what if that, what if that, what if that. But it just forces us to say, okay, all that stuff is not even real. But God, this is what's real. This is what I'm concerned about. And this is what I'm asking. So let's say around your company, there's rumors, or maybe not even rumors, they've announced there's going to be layoffs. And you know that there's a number of people are going to be laid off, right? And of course, you're going to have Maremna. I mean, you're going to have concern. You're not just be like, oh, well, whatever. No, you'll have Maremna that could easily become anxiety that takes over and begins to spin you out, right? And so when that starts happening, to say, okay, God, let me think about what I'm worried about or what really is real here. Because our minds will go all, what if I get laid off? What if I don't find another job? What if I'm unemployed for 10 years? What if I lose my house? What if I'm on the street? What if my kids leave me? All this stuff, right? To think, no, wait a minute. God, I'm concerned about this. I'm gonna pray that I don't lose my job. If I do, then you'll help me through this and know that you're ultimately my provider and you've promised to do that. And so God, I'm gonna turn this merimna before it spins out into a request that I then give to you. It's powerful to name it. But then when we name it, to trade it, which means to give it away and receive something else. A trade. I mean, the kind of trade, like you remember when you were in school, maybe let's say picture you're in the cafeteria and your mom has packed you a lunch and you look in it and it's a bologna sandwich, Wonder Bread, American cheese, and mustard. And you look across the table and your friend got lunch in the cafeteria and it's pizza. And you're thinking, how can I market my bologna sandwich in a way that I can fool this bozo into giving me pizza, right? That would be a good trade. Or maybe you've got an orange and your friend has a Twinkie. And how are you gonna market your orange to try to get to that Twinkie, right? It's a better trade. In this case, way better trade. Because what it's talking about is to trade our merimna, our concern, for God's peace. Now that's a good trade, right? But what does that mean? What does that look like? Well, there's something we give so that we can receive. So let's talk about giving it. How do we give our merimna? That's what Peter, 1 Peter 5:7 tells us to do in the New Testament. He says to give all your merimna to God because he cares for you. He's not indifferent. He wants it. He's like, give me your merimna. Because we can't do anything about anything, but he can. He's God. He's in control. So he's like, hey, we're not made to just handle merimna on our own. He's like, give it to me because I care about this. So what does that look like? How do we do that? Well, Paul says we turn it into a prayer request and we add to that prayer request thanksgiving. Like, let me read it again. In every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your request to God, and then the peace of God will guard your hearts and minds. So we turn it into a prayer request, attach thanksgiving to that. So we turn it, God, here's my concern, here's my request, here's what I would love for you to do, but God, it's up to you, you're God. And if you don't do it, what I'm asking, then just help me deal with whatever, you know, just give me the ability to deal with it. But then you add thanksgiving, and that's really important part of this. Because when we add thanksgiving, like he said, rejoice in the Lord, you're like, I'm supposed to rejoice in my merimna and what I'm worried about right now, my kids in the hospital, I'm supposed to rejoice in the Lord. How am I gonna do that? I'm supposed to thank the Lord. It's not thanking the Lord or rejoicing in the circumstance. It's in the God who is above the circumstance. And it reminds our soul something very important of, oh yeah, God, you're in control, you're good, you're not indifferent, you've got a plan, you love me, you love the people I'm worried about, I'm not on my own. And therefore we can trust. And it's a strong message to our soul. Because the God of the universe, this is one way to think about it, because the God of the universe is my dad, tells our soul that, loves me more than anyone can understand and cares for me. Now imagine if our soul knew that, that the God of the universe is my dad. That's what Jesus said we can call God. And he's in control and he loves me. And I'm not on my own, he's with me. If our soul knows that, do you think it'll be a little better going through the Maremna? And what makes our soul know that is when we, in prayer, thank God, and it just lifts our head above the circumstances to see him. So we turn it into a prayer request, add to it thanksgiving, and we give it to him. And when we give it to him, he gives us something in return. It's a good trade. Pizza for the bologna sandwich. But it's pizza. I mean, it's pizza. It's peace. That's so funny. It's peace for our Maremna, right? He said, hey, let me take the Maremna. Let me give you a piece of pizza. Let me give you peace. And that's better. And he says, peace is the peace that passes understanding. Because it doesn't make sense. Like, have you ever watched a Christian that, you know, go through something and they seem so calm and you think, are you just delusional? Are you just detached from reality? And it could be that they are delusional and detached from reality. But sometimes, often, they're not. It's just they've done what we're talking about. They've given their Maremna to God in a way that he's given them peace and peace that transcends understanding from a human level because the circumstances have not changed. There's no reason to be at peace. You just lost your job or whatever. But it's like, you know what? I'm at peace because I've given this to God and he is good and he loves me and he's in control. And therefore, I can have peace. Even if it doesn't make sense, even if the circumstances never change, I know God has me. I know he's good. I know he's in control and I can have peace. So we name it and trade it. Now, my experience with naming and trading is that it doesn't last forever. When I'm in situations where I'm worried and concerned about something and have a lot of Maremna that can easily become the kind of anxiety that takes over, it's heavy Maremna, heavy concern, anxiety, sometimes my name it and trade it lasts about 10 seconds. I've got peace for about 10 seconds and then it starts spinning again, but that's okay. You know what you do? You name it again and you trade it again. And sometimes something so significant that we really need other people to do that for us. That's why we're supposed to have Maremna for each other. To say, look, I don't know if I can pull this off, this peace thing, and naming it and trading it on my own. I need you to be doing it too. I need you to be praying for me. And we'll talk about that in a couple weeks. We'll talk about the power of community. How sometimes we don't have enough faith to make it, but that's okay because we're in a community of people that can have faith for us. And sometimes it's like that. Sometimes we need help. Name it and trade it. We need to understand why we really are having a hard time naming it and trading it. Sometimes there's deeper reasons for that, and that's where counselors and all that can help too. But my experience is the name it and trade it thing is really powerful, but I have to repeat it quite a bit, and that's okay. And I bring other people into it, and that's wise to do. Now, we're going to do some naming and trading in a little bit. In prayer. But first, we're going to see another scene to illustrate what Paul says in the middle of this that feels like an ADD moment when he says, let your gentleness be evident to all. Like, why does he say that in Philippians 4:5? Let your gentleness be evident to all. Like, okay, I get rejoicing. The Lord is near. Here's what to do with your anxiety. But why introduce the whole thing about gentleness in the middle of that? And it's not an ADD moment. Because when you and I become stressed out, when we become anxious, when Maremna starts to take over, often we become, if we don't give it to God and receive his peace, we become not the best versions of ourselves. We become short and sensitive. We're just thinking about ourselves. We treat people ways that we normally wouldn't treat people. We're unkind. And we feel justified in our psyche to be unkind because of what we're going through, but we're not. And that's why Paul says, don't let that happen. Don't lose peace with God. Don't lose peace in your soul. And don't lose peace with people closest to you. And it's easy to do that. And sometimes part of what we have to do is to say, you know what, yeah, I want peace with God, but God, there's some things I probably have to do to do some repair. I love this little scene in the movie that illustrates that. So in the movie, the scene that we're going to see is Riley is just coming down from a panic attack. She's just done something really mean to one of her best friends, and she's been mean to both of her best friends, and there's this, she's been unkind in her stress and in her anxiety, and then this scene. Forgiveness is a powerful thing, right? And often it starts with admission. I'm so sorry. I know it may take time to forgive me, but I just hope you can. I'm sorry. I was a jerk. No excuse. I'm sorry. And for people who've been in prolonged stress, especially prolonged anxiety, it's easy to have casualties in our relationship. And so in addition to, we're going to pray and name it to God, our anxiety, and trade it. But I also want us to think about, God, are there people in my life that I need to go to and make it right? And I need to, God, I need your help to be kind and to be gentle, even though I'm stressed. Give me peace with you, peace in my soul, and peace with other people. So with that in mind, let's bow our heads together in prayer. And let's name it and trade it. So I want you to think about something, a meremna in your life right now, a concern. Could be all that anxiety or just a concern, I don't know, but pick something. And name it. Turn it into a prayer request. Say, God, you know, here's what I'm, my meremna, here's what it is. And Lord, this is what I would love for you to do in that situation. Whatever it is, just say it to him. And God, whatever you choose to do, I help me right now give that meremna to you. That's what you say, give it to me because I care for you. So God, help me really give it to you because you're the only one that can do anything about it anyway. So God, let me give it to you. And would you give me in return your peace? As I think about you with thanksgiving, knowing that you're God and that you're good and you're in control, God, would you let that sink into my soul in such a way that I can actually have peace? Peace that doesn't make sense because circumstance is still not great, but I'm just going to trust you with it. Help me do my part. Help me trust you for what I can't control and have peace. And then I want you to think about peace with other people. And are there people that God brings to mind, somebody that God brings to mind to say, you know what, I have not been kind. I've not been gentle. I've not been loving. I've not been generous in heart. And just confess that to God. Say, God, I'm sorry. It's not who I want to be. And then let me encourage you just to ask him to say, God, would you help me make that right? To reach out to that person and say, I'm sorry. Father, thank you that you really do want peace in this anxious, fractious world. It's possible to have peace. Peace with you, peace in our heart, peace with other people. And would you lead us on a path of peace? Thank you that you let us know what we can do with our meremna. And God, I pray you just help us continue to name it and trade it and be gentle and kind. In Jesus' name, amen.